Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. I'm Todd Albaugh. It is Tuesday, May 2nd, 2023, along with Mr. Aaron Zommers, our producer and engineer. Welcome into hour number two of the program. Question later on this hour, we're going to ask you, we'll ask it now. We're going to take your calls in a bit. Have you ever ghosted someone for a job interview? Ever had an interview scheduled and then you just ghosted them? Didn't show up, didn't call, didn't text, didn't email, just ghosted him. Gonna ask you later on this hour. 715-388-7155. Again, area code 715-388-7155. Have you ever ghosted someone for a job interview? For those of you who don't know, the term ghosted means you just disappear. So like, you know, people Mr. Zommer's age live on the phone. And you're texting someone or snapping someone, and then all of a sudden they don't respond. They don't do it. They just ghost you. They just disappear. Have I got that right, Mr. Zommers?
Yep.
Yeah. So, he's ghosted me. He's gone. He's left the show.
there are different kinds of ghosting. Like, you might leave someone on red, which means you are either, you have, like, if you both have an iPhone, you'll get red receipts where they'll tell you if they read your text. Or if you're on Snapchat or something, it'll say if they read it. So leaving them on red is where you open their message. So clearly you've looked at it, and then you just don't reply. And that's more rude.
Yes. I've had that happen. Left me on red. Story of my life. So yeah, we're talking about, and if your employer, have you ever had an interviewee or a potential candidate ghost you for a job interview? Have you ever ghosted someone for a job interview? 715-388-7155. Again, area code 715-388-7155. Talk about that a little bit. Also coming up in this hour, we're going to talk, first of all, about the debt ceiling and the implications. If Congress and President Biden, basically Republicans and Democrats, don't come to an agreement, what is it that lurks ahead as of June 1st for our country if they do not come together? In hour number three, then we're going to have Phil Nee from WRCO, host of Those Were the Days, on the program, talking a little bit about the passing of Gordon Lightfoot, great singer and songwriter, wrote The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, a Wisconsin classic. Going to have Phil on the program for a couple of minutes to talk about that. And then at 10:30, it is Tuesday Tangents with Luke Mathers, co-host of Dueling Tangents every afternoon from 2 until 3 on the Civic Media Radio Network, except for WXCO in Wausau, where it's the Chad Holmes Show from 2 until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So looking forward to all of that, taking your phone calls as well. But first, here's a look at the news and weather headlines for this May 2nd, Tuesday, 2023. Weather forecast for Richland Center. Pretty nice day today, although it will be windy. Partly sunny, a high of 55, wind gusts at 30 miles per hour. So be aware of that. For tonight, winds will continue gusting at 30, a low tonight of 35, and for tomorrow, mostly sunny and a high near 60 degrees, 70s by the weekend in Richland Center. Up in Wausau, this fine day on a Tuesday, a chance for sprinkles, a high of 44 degrees at WXCO Land, Bull Falls Radio. Then for tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 31. And tomorrow, Wednesday, sunny and a high of 57 degrees. Over in Amory, WLAK Lake Air Radio, sunny skies today, breezy conditions, winds gusting over 25 miles per hour, maybe some up to 30. It's going to be a high of 57 degrees today. For tonight, mostly clear, low of 31. And for Wednesday, mostly sunny and a high of 61 degrees. Looks like a little bit more rain up in the northern part of the state for the end of the work week. But, hey, at least temperatures are on their way up in terms of the weather forecast. A couple of news headlines for you. More than 11,000 members of the Writers Guild of America, WGA, are set to go on strike today for the first time in 15 years, a move that might affect your favorite TV shows. Last month, WGA members voted 98% in favor of going on strike if no new deal is reached with studios over reduced job opportunities and the loss of some sources of income due to an industry shift toward streaming services. We'll talk to our regular contributor, Jeff Perry, after the 9:30 hour, get his take on this as a connoisseur of late night and television in general. Find out what his thoughts are in terms of another writer's strike across entertainment. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has accepted an invitation to meet with President Joe Biden on May 9th about the debt ceiling, setting the stage for a high-stakes moment in the ongoing standoff. Yesterday, Biden invited the top four congressional leaders, including McCarthy, to discuss a plan to make progress on debt ceiling talks following months of an impasse between the president and House Republicans. We'll discuss that as well in just one moment. Russia has suffered more than 100,000 casualties since December in its war with Ukraine, according to new estimated figures announced yesterday by White House official John Kirby. The study number, which includes both wounded and killed, is a key signal that Moscow's winter offensive has backfired, according to Kirby. The U.S. estimates more than 20,000 Russian troops have been killed in action in recent months. At least six people were killed yesterday when a dust storm in Illinois caused more than 70 vehicles, 70, to crash into a major highway. The crashes along I-55 happened in Montgomery and Sangamon counties south of the state capital after dust from newly plowed fields engulfed both north and southbound lanes. Dozens of others were hospitalized with injuries ranging from minor to life-threatening. Be careful out there on the roadways. Back with more, going to talk a little about the debt ceiling and also talk about, have you ever ghosted someone in a job interview? After this, the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. It is now 9:15. A little Gord Lightfoot, the great singer-songwriter, passed away overnight. Phil Nee from WRCO's Those Were the Days, amongst other programs, will join us next hour to discuss a little bit the life and times of Gord Lightfoot, Phil's take on his songwriting, and what his passing means to the music industry. Phil Nee in hour number three, talking about Gord Lightfoot. Right now at 9:16, going to plug this. We're going to talk about this in a minute. The Assembly last week passed a bill to combat interview ghosting. They actually passed a bill about this. Apparently it's such a problem they thought it needed legislation. Have you ever ghosted someone? Just not showing up to an interview? Not called them, not texted, not written, just didn't show up. Taking your calls in a bit. 715-388-7155. Again, area code 715-388-7155. That is coming up right now.
How can you legislate that? Okay, I know. We'll talk about it. We'll find out.
Well,
I'm confused.
See, that's a great question. We will talk about that. Right now, though, first I want to check in on a story that we've talked about before but haven't talked about in a while. And I'm not sure that it's getting enough play. I think the politics of it, the fireworks of it are getting play. But I'm not sure the seriousness of this has actually gotten enough play in media. Talking about the National Default Day, some are calling it D-Day 2. It could come as early as June 1st. For those keeping track at home, that's less than a month away from now. D-Day 2 is Default Day, the day when the United States Treasury runs out of accounting tricks and America becomes a deadbeat nation, unable to pay its bills. Yesterday, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen warned House Speaker Kevin McCarthy of the impending D-Day 2. Yellen's prediction for when default day may come is informed by the results of Tax Day 2 weeks ago. Remember Tax Day? Got pushed off from, usually it's the 15th of April. This year it was April 18th because of holidays. If Tax Day had brought in more revenue, Default Day could have come later. Think about that. But of course, you know, people like the very wealthy, the one percenters, Trump and the ilk, have all these loopholes. So they actually pay far less percentage of taxes than you or I. You and I pay a higher percentage of our income in tax than billionaires do in the United States of America. With default day possibly just 4 weeks away, President Joe Biden has asked the party leaders from both houses to a summit meeting at the White House. Biden is not changing his position. He refuses to negotiate on the debt ceiling, but is happy to negotiate on a budget. The problem is House Republicans are supposed to introduce a budget, and they have not. So Biden, like many of us, continues to ask Speaker McCarthy, where's the budget? Mr. Zomers?
Where's the beef?
Yes. Where's the beef? Where's the budget? So again, for those folks that might not be the political or news nerd that I am, to kind of set this up again, the reality of what's really going on. The United States has to pass a budget. All right, that's when you pass the budget, that's when you're deciding when you spend money. Do it in Congress, we do it in the state legislature on a biennial basis, meaning every other year. You pass a budget. That's when you spend the money. Once the budget is signed into law, you have spent the money for the next year, next 2 years. And then you actually have to pay for what you spent. Our friend Matt Flynn of Matt Flynn Direct every afternoon from 3 until 4, I heard this. I'm like, he is so spot on. And so I have to give Matt Flynn credit, but this is the way he described it. It's like taking your credit card to the store. And you think, I want to purchase this. And you buy a couple of shirts and a pair of pants and a pair of new shoes because you're going on a trip. And you buy this nice outfit. And you take it on the trip and you enjoy the nice outfit. And when you get home, you open your mail and there's your credit card statement. And then you actually have to write a check and pay for your credit card bill. If you don't, you're charged interest, ongoing monthly interest. And eventually, if you don't pay that credit card bill, they'll come after you with the legal system. They'll cut off your credit card and they will come after you. And they will get your money. That's the way credit cards work. What we have done as a country, when we passed the budget, we put that money on our card, so to speak. Then the bill comes due. And you got to pay your bill. So raising the debt ceiling is a matter of course, is the legislative way that you pay your bill. It has happened under every president, Republican and Democrat. It's just the way we do business. Now, you could say we need to permanently lift the debt ceiling so we don't have to go through this. I don't want to call it a charade, but I don't want to exclude Democrats from this. When Republicans have been in power, Democrats have controlled one or both houses of Congress, they've also tried to do the same thing. I don't think to quite this extent. But if you can't pay your bills, bad things happen. And so what happens in cases like this, instead of just admitting or saying, yep, this is a matter of course, this is a natural thing, everybody has to pay their bills. I mean, what do we always hear from Republicans? When I was the Republican Party, this was a narrative we used all the time. That Americans want us to run government like we run our kitchen table or run a business. Well, I don't know too many people sitting in their kitchen table are too many business gals or guys that say, you know what, we're just not going to pay our bills. But that's what the Republican narrative is from leadership. You have to run the country, run the state like a business, like a kitchen table. So now the normal thing to do if you're a good government person, regardless of party, is to say, okay, this is something we normally do. Let's pay our bill. But Kevin McCarthy and the Republican leadership see this as an opportunity to gin up their base. Because, of course, they're trying to take away from the fact that they have gone after women's reproductive health rights. That it was a Republican court appointed by a Republican President Trump, confirmed by a Republican Senate, that led to a court that overturned Roe v. Wade. And now there are many who want a national abortion ban so that it would not go back to the states' rights, because there are some states that abortion is still legal. Wisconsin is not one of them at this point. This is not polling well for Republicans. They didn't do well in elections here in Wisconsin last month on that issue. Republicans know they are in a bad spot going into 2024, especially if Trump is their nominee. And by all accounts right now, it looks like that's what it's going to be, another Trump-Biden rematch. So they're trying to divert our attention away from what's really going on and the important stuff, and trying to make this an issue, trying to make it sound like Democrats and President Joe Biden are trying to spend us into oblivion. It's an easy line to get, right? Tax and spend Democrats has been going on forever. But this one ain't true. This is a matter of course, a regular thing that the government does. And that's why I admire Joe Biden on this. This is the advantage you get. You can look, I mean, he made jokes himself over the weekend about his age. You know, at the Washington Correspondents' Dinner, the best one I thought was, you know, when he said, look, I'm a big supporter of the First Amendment. And it's not just because my friend Jimmy Madison wrote it. I thought that was really good. Joe Biden's been around a long time. Can't deny that. But here's what you get with experience like Joe Biden, who has seen every trick in the book in Washington. He's like, no, man, we got to pay this. I'm not going to play politics with you. Have you seen Joe Biden go up and send out tweets every day and attack Kevin McCarthy in a big back and forth? No. Joe just sits there being cool because he knows what the law is. But he's like, look, I'm not negotiating on this because we never have. They got to raise the debt ceiling. If they want to negotiate on the budget, that'd be great, because you know what? Congress is supposed to send me a budget and they're not telling people what's in the budget. And we know why that is, because Republican caucus in the House is in complete chaos because Marjorie Taylor Greene has basically taken Kevin McCarthy's political gonads and put on herself, and she's running the House. Kevin McCarthy ain't running anything. Republicans in the House are in complete chaos due to, and we saw this, right? We knew this was coming. The mess it took to even get a speaker elected. That is replaying behind closed doors on issue after issue, including raising the debt ceiling. My guess is Kevin McCarthy himself knows this and is ready to move forward and cut some kind of a deal. Yes, we'll raise the debt ceiling if we get X, Y, and Z in the budget. And you know what? Joe's probably ready to do that. But he's not going to negotiate on the debt ceiling itself, which is what Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and the spooky mega caucus want. And the problem is Kevin McCarthy can't push them because it only takes one of them to call a vote for Speaker of the House.
But if you recall, he was 1,000% confident in his job security.
He was. Article from CNN this morning, millions of Americans could suffer if debt showdown isn't resolved in the next 30 days. The jobs, benefits, and financial security of millions of Americans could start disappearing in less than a month as the Republican House leverages a debt shutdown to try to force big spending cuts on President Joe Biden. Treasury Secretary, as we said, issued a stark warning saying they have until June 1st to do something. Yellen wrote to House Speaker Kevin McCarthy that unless Congress acted, it would cause, quote, severe hardship for American families, harm our global leadership position, and raise questions about our ability to defend our national security interests. Experts have warned of a potential crisis on the scale of the 2008 financial meltdown, with the threat of benefits not being paid to veterans and senior citizens, and halts to military funding and vital government programs. in her letter swiftly turned, her letter rather has swiftly turned, has for weeks been a theoretical threat of a default sometime this summer, leaving McCarthy a little time to act. But again, because there was fewer revenue brought in on tax day because of the loopholes for the one percenters, Yellen says we have until June 1st to get this fixed. We're going to stay on this. Call your U.S. senator and congressperson. Let them know. Back with more after this, including an emphasis on the writer's strike and talk with Jeff Perry. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Show is now at 9:33 by request. A little Beatles for Tuesday, the 2nd of May, 2023. Paperback writer talking about the writer's strike in LA, joined by our ongoing contributor and friend, Mr. Jeff Perry, is on the phone. Mr. Perry, an appropriate song for this morning.
Yeah, I got to have my Beatles fix and actually have it address the topic at the same time. What were the odds?
Appreciate you taking time this morning, Jeff. We've mentioned this a couple of times this morning. For those that might not have heard, more than 11,000 members of the Writers Guild of America, WGA, are set to go on strike today for the first time in 15 years, a move that might affect people's favorite TV shows. Last month, WGA members voted 98% in favor of going on a strike if no new deal is reached with studios over reduced job opportunities and the loss of some sources of income due to an industry shift toward streaming services. The strike comes as many companies producing shows that employ writers have seen their stock prices decline, prompting cost cuts and layoffs. Mr. Perry, you are one of the best connoisseurs of late night television that I know. What do you think this means? I mean, Mr. Zomers didn't know. I said, well, the last time, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe 15 years ago, that's when David Letterman, I also think Jimmy Kimmel did this, they started growing a beard and said they weren't going to shave it off until after the writer's strike was over. Do I have that right?
Yeah, I believe so. So, little history, the WGA, as they're called, Writers Guild of America, has gone on strike only a few times in its history. The first one was in 1960. They did it three times in the 80s. And then, like you said, the last one was 15 years ago. Traditionally, late-night hosts have been very supportive of the writers in these strikes. Many times, these hosts started out as writers themselves and are members of the Writers Guild. So they are usually very supportive of the Writers Guild. And I believe in the 2007-08 strike, Letterman and maybe Kimmel too, but I know Letterman made a deal with the WGA so that he could stay on the air and keep his writers. Got some criticism from some praise from others for that. But he wanted to make sure, I believe he was paying his writers out of his own company, basically.
I think you're right. I think it was the old Worldwide Pants was making writers happy. At least his writers.
Yeah. And going back into the late 80s, I remember in 1988, during the Writers Guild strike, Letterman came back on the air with new shows without a writing staff and did like his top 10 list himself and tried to come up with things. Like, I remember he had a barber come in and shave him one night because he had no material, so he had to figure out.
We absolutely without shame stole that on our show at Platteville. Remember that Tom McCarthy came down and cut my hair on the old Sunday night show.
And why not?
But I think you're right. I mean, when Letterman came back and did his own stuff for that brief time, it was actually really funny.
Yeah. He did some top 10 lists that were, you know, very groan worthy, but they were fun to watch.
Right. Did Johnny Carson do the same thing for a while? Wrote his own jokes during that time for a little while?
Yeah, I believe so. Yep, you're right. Yeah. And I think maybe even Carson did it first and Letterman followed suit, which was probably the way it worked back then. You know, Carson was king, obviously.
Right, right.
But some of the stuff, you know, that the writers are striking for, you know, a lot of people that, well, you know, they're TV people, they're millionaires, but these are not. I was doing, coincidentally was reading about this last night. I had no idea we were going to talk about it then at the time, but there was a great article on NPR's website about this. And there was a writer of, for the ABC show called Abbott Elementary, which I'm not familiar with, but the writer, his name was Brittany Nichols, and she said that when she wrote for TV shows that were on, you know, broadcast TV, traditional TV, when they would air, and remember summer reruns?
Absolutely.
The shows would air in summer reruns, and she would get a residual for that. It would be half her original writing fee she'd get when the repeat aired.
Mm-hmm.
But now that things are streaming, she gets just over 5% of her writing fee.
Really?
And so she'll be getting, all summer long, she'll be getting checks for like $3, $10, $7, she said. And it's not something that you can plan your life around.
Right. Imagine that.
So that's one of the reasons for the strike is, you know, they used to get, guaranteed fees. So if a show was being in placed in development and they needed some scripts, the writers would get a guaranteed fee for writing. You know, even if the show never made it to production,
sure,
they'd get a guaranteed salary. Well, now if they write a show on spec, they don't get paid unless it gets picked up. And so they could put all this work into you know, 2, 3, 4 scripts and then never get paid for them. So these are some of the issues. I'm sure there are more, but just some of the issues that stuck out in my mind as wow, yeah, I think I would probably want to go on strike too if I was facing that.
I think it's really interesting what you bring up about the summer reruns, because we don't have that anymore for the most part. I remember, like what you said, you would think, well, because this is before we had VCRs, but we didn't have the DVR player that we have, electronic digital stuff. So you'd think, well, if I missed the show, I could catch it in a summer rerun, you know, and now you can't, because they got their own new summer shows for the summer.
Yeah, and that was another thing. A lot of those shows are quote unquote unscripted.
Right.
And so they'll have, you know, they won't have WGA members even on staff of the show. And that's another thing that they're kind of upset about. And I guess you could go either way on that. It's kind of the network's decision on what kind of show they want to air, I suppose. But, you know, a lot of those, you know, so-called reality shows are actually scripted,
right,
quote unquote.
Right.
You know, they know what's going to happen,
right,
but they may not have lines to read, but they know, you know, they have an outline and they know what's going to happen, but they still call them unscripted and they don't have to pay writers, or they don't have to pay them much. So, I do like that the late night hosts are continuing their tradition of supporting the writers. Jimmy Fallon was quoted in some stories I read, and Seth Meyers and others. So, you know, it really appears that, you know, the late night host, which is really what I'm interested in the most in TV, I guess, these days, are supporting the writers. Because I think, like you said, I appreciate good writing as well.
Mm-hmm.
There are some performers out there who can improvise and do a good job, but not very many of them.
Right.
That's
the thing, right? A lot of people don't realize that. And I watched Colbert last night. I probably shouldn't have stayed up that late, but I did. And Colbert basically, during his usual kind of meanwhile segment, did a serious take and said that, you know, he's part of WGA because he helps write for the show as well, but took a firm stand with the writers and basically said, you know, if this happens, we might not see you for a while. And so they kind of did a couple of bits, like things that they think are going to happen in the next month or something like that. It was pretty good. But yeah, I mean, Colbert is I think one of those people as well who will stand with them. But to your point, a lot of these people they are funny. They can be naturally funny, but a lot of the things that we see that seem to be one-offs or whatever, that's all written for them. That's all planned out.
Oh, yeah.
And they're very good at delivering it.
Yes, absolutely. And I can think of maybe Craig Ferguson was really good at improvising.
Yes.
Like a lot of times he would have his monologue written probably, and that was about it for the show. But But there's not very many performers like that who can, you know, just improvise off the cuff and make it worth watching.
Right.
And they need the writers, and they don't have them right now. And I also remember in the late 80s when they had the Writers Guild strike and Letterman came back and did his new shows, he would always refer to the producers as money-grubbing scum every
That's fantastic. I don't know why it came up on YouTube yesterday. I can't remember. You'd know what year it's from, but there was some woman on with like a baboon dressed up as a boy and got playing around like cymbals and stuff. And Letterman was just like, he tried to talk to her and she wasn't having it. And the baboon was doing whatever he wanted. And eventually Letterman just started walking away. He's like, all right, do whatever you want. You know, I mean, just completely didn't care, which I loved about it. But yeah, I mean, I think Letterman also oftentimes would have the ability to freelance as well as Craig Ferguson. Certainly Carson did in his heyday as well. But you're right, not very many of these people can really talk extemporaneously and be funny and be engaging.
Yeah, no, and the race, like, you look at a show like Seth Meyers' show where he does pretty detailed segments, like a closer look where they really go into a news story and they make jokes about it, you know, and it's like sometimes it's a 10-12 minute piece. That stuff doesn't happen without probably several writers contributing. So, you know, there's some real importance to that writing staff in a show like that. And oh my goodness, Saturday Night Live, you know, no way can that show go on the air without writers. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, what they do. Will Lorne Michaels pull a Letterman and cut his own deal with the right. WGA? Probably not.
We'll see. We'll see. Hoping to talk to our friend Chris Pauls a little bit later this week, who is a writer himself, and get his take on this from a writer's perspective. But Chris, Jeff, rather, to the point of, to your knowledge, and Chris will know more about this than you and I probably, but to your knowledge, a lot of these people in Hollywood and who you have to kind of live there. I mean, there is some ability to telecommute, but for those folks living out on the coast, it's expensive. And a lot of these writers, especially when they're writing pilots, they're not writing the big shows, the big blockbusters. They're not making a lot of money.
No, they're not. And you know, their salary, it might seem to, you know, people in Amory, Wisconsin, like, oh, that's a lot of money for writing a TV show. Right. But like you just said, it's expensive to live in LA. It's expensive to live in New York.
Right.
And, you know, that's not going to go very far. It's certainly not as far as it goes, you know, in Wausau and Richland Center. And it's just not going to be, and if it's something that takes off, if it's something that becomes really popular, well, then maybe they deserve a little more.
Right.
Too, you know?
No, they struggle for it. I mean, one of the writers I know the best, I'm going to try to have him on as well a little bit later, Burke Sharpless, who I ran John Sharpless's campaign for Congress back in 98 and 2000. And his son, Burke, a graduate of Madison West High School here and UW-Madison, now lives in L.A., been there for years. And he toiled for years with his writing partner, Matt, and they wrote all kinds of things and wrote scripts for movies and it got bought by big names and then never got made. And they didn't see anything because they don't see anything until the thing gets made. And finally, it wasn't until, maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago, after like 15 years of having some mild hits, that they their script and they got to write and produce, I think it was on Netflix, it was the remake or the reboot of Lost in Space. I'm not sure if you saw any of that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I did.
But so they were the head writers, and I think they got producer credit as well on that. So they finally started making some money. But writing is, you have to love it, you have to be passionate about it, and you have to be able to accept, you know, being rejected hundreds, if not thousands, of times sometimes before you make it.
Yeah, absolutely. Similar to the way it is with musicians.
Yeah.
Or probably anything in the creative arts, but you're right with writing. And that's a great story about, you know, all of a sudden, you know, doing the remake of Lost in Space. If you could get that story on the air, that would be interesting to hear their take on all this, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to try to get him on a little bit later this week. So, yeah, a great guy. Burke is a hilarious guy, number one, and just a great person. But, yeah, he has some fascinating stories, probably some he wouldn't tell on the air. But I mean, you see it all. You see it all, right? Because you deal with all these people just have huge egos out in Hollywood. And here he is, a guy who grew up in Madison. And he's just like, it's just ridiculous. And then of course, you meet some nice people as well along the way. You're like, well, he's a real person or she's a real person. And so however this turns out, I hope it's short from a selfish standpoint, a person who enjoys television and things like that. I hope the Writers Guild of America strike is short. But I also hope that they can stick it out and get what they need out of it as well.
Yeah, I hope the producers cave and they stop being money-grubbing scum.
That's an excellent way to put it. Mr. Perry, we thank you for your time, as always, and your insight. We'll talk to you soon, my friend. Jeff Perry, thank you so very much.
Thanks. Back to my Crunch Berries.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's right. Enjoy your Crunch Berries. Back with more after this. This is the Todd Allball Show, the Civic Media Radio Network. Favorite songs, actually, from Gordon Lightfoot on the Civic Radio Media Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. Nicely done, Mr. Zomers, there. What was that selection?
That is If You Could Read My Mind by Gordon Lightfoot.
Indeed it is. Gordon Lightfoot passed away last night, according to his family, peacefully. We'll be joined next hour by Phil Nee, host of Those Were the Days on WRCO, music connoisseur that he is. Talk a little bit more about Gordon Lightfoot, his music, his writing, and his passing. Looking forward to hearing from Phil in hour number three. Also coming up in hour number three, at the bottom of the hour at 10:30, we'll be joined for our Tuesday Tangents with Luke Mathers, as per usual on a Tuesday. Host of Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian every afternoon from 2 until 3, except in Wausau on WXCO, where Chad Holmes has his fine program, The Chad Holmes Show, every afternoon from 2 until 4. I love talking to people like Jeff who are connoisseurs of late night television and television in general. A guy like Phil Nee, connoisseur of music. Always good to talk to people who really know this stuff, who have studied it for years. Enjoy their insight. Like to hear from you as well. If you'd like to call in, talk a couple of minutes about Gordon Lightfoot or maybe this writer's strike, whatever's on your mind. We're still getting texts on favorite breakfast cereals. That was a good one. I like that. Talks about. We'll still take your call if you want to tell us what your favorite breakfast cereal is. 715-388-7155. Again, area code 715-388-7155.
Speaking of favorite cereals, yes. I'll bring a couple more. Right. My family chimed in a little bit.
Very good.
So my mom said granola. So we got another check there.
Yep.
My dad said corn Chex.
All right.
I agree that that's the best Chex. Yep. Rice Chex gets soggy very fast.
They do.
And then one of my sisters, Anna, says Waffle Crisp is her favorite.
Waffle Crisp. All right. Very good. More selections for your favorite breakfast cereal. Here's a little note to end on hour number two here. From down south, little story called The Magdalene, try that again, Magdalena's Mega Invasives, all right? Hippos owned by hippopotamuses, that is, like hungry, hungry hippos. Hungry hippos owned by drug kingpin Pablo Escobar in a private zoo have long since established themselves in the jungle terrain surrounding his former compound in a 120-mile stretch of the Magdalena River. The Colombian government has spent years trying to figure out on what on earth to do with displaced megafauna, including sending hunters out to kill them. Extremely unpopular. Large protests ensued. Because hippos apparently are not native to Colombia. But yet Pablo Escobar has all these there. And it causes big problems. So, you know, sending hunters out to kill them, not so popular. Also, they looked at a current campaign to castrate as many of the hippos as possible. Would you want that job? Well, your job is to go out and castrate hippopotamuses.
Hippos are dangerous.
That's my point. You have games like Hungry Hungry Hippo, and oh, look, the hippopotamus is cute. And you go to the zoo, and there's, oh, the hippopotamus. Those are one of the most dangerous animals on Earth, a hippopotamus. I'm not kidding. Because they're kind of indestructible. And so, yeah.
And they're just huge.
They're huge. Well, apparently that's why they got to castrate them. So far, several extremely brave biologists have successfully fixed 11 male hippos and 2 female hippos out of 140 that now live in the wild. 140 wild hippopotamuses on the compound of Pablo Escobar in Colombia. 140, and they've only castrated or fixed 11 males and 2 female hippos. They need to get your veterinarian that took care of the one nut at Geico. Send him down there to Colombia. maybe that could get things fixed, pun intended.
Maybe.
But wow, think about that. 140 hippopotamuses roaming 120-mile stretch. So, I mean, it's a fairly big area, but 140 hippos, I don't know what you call, what do you call a herd of hippos or a group of hippos? It's probably not a herd. It's probably something like a clutch of hippos.
It is actually.
What is it?
There's a couple of things, but a herd is the main one.
Really?
You can also call them a sea or a thunder.
Ooh, I like that. A thunder of hippos. But a herd is okay. All right. So a herd or a thunder of hippos. Causing lots of problems down there in Colombia. Not a small problem if you live next to them. And as Mr. Zomer said, they're a dangerous animal. I mean, they're fun to go to the zoo and somebody, a zookeeper tosses a watermelon at them, a big old watermelon, and they crunch that thing in those jaws like it was a Pop Tart, whatever, or like a grape. It's just gone. Their jaws are massive. You do not want to be caught in the jaws of a hippo. 9:56 now. Coming up in hour 3, as we said, a great hour. Going to have Phil Neen join us from WRCO talking about Gordon Lightfoot. Also maybe ask him a little bit about Harry Belafonte. A couple of greats passing this past week in music and songwriting. Getting Phil Neen's opinion. And then Luke Mathers will be in. We'll talk to him about all kinds of things. First and foremost, I want to check on his well-being. Because Luke is a huge Milwaukee Bucks fan, and like many of you, was crushed, devastated when the Bucks had a forced early exit in the playoffs. He is recovering, little by little. So we'll check in on Luke's well-being in terms of a recovering Bucks fan. We'll also talk a little bit about an issue that Luke has been all over on Dueling Tangents, and that is the U.S. Supreme Court and what appears to be quite a bit of corruption, particularly on the case of Clarence Thomas. And now there are allegations that Chief Justice John Roberts' wife was also kind of dealing under the table. Or maybe that's not. She was doing deals, and many people feel it's based on her access to her husband, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. What is it going to take to clean up the Supreme Court? Can it be done? Can it be done? I mean, probably not going to. The votes aren't going to be there to impeach a Supreme Court justice of the House. They have a lifetime term. Do we need Supreme Court justice reform? We'll talk about that with Mr. Mathers at the bottom of next hour. Also, your phone calls are always welcome as well. Stay with us. Hour number 3 of the Todd Allball Show rolls on. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.